I have some thoughts, ideas, a concept. I write it, I rant it, you hear it, and it goes down smooth. Word! Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. Welcome to the Radical Russ Show. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, coming to you live and direct from my undisclosed mountain location in the beautiful state of Jefferson region here in the state of Southern Oregon. Wow, we're back. It's been like 4 years since I've done one of these things. I hope everybody can hear me okay. Coming up on today's debut show, we've got Gabby Johnson from the Grants Pass Remembrance Project here to talk about that Oregon city's history as a sundown town. I'll also give you my love letter to America and a little bit of information on me. Some of you may remember me from my previous podcast. I may be brand new to some of you, so we'll do some introductions as well. I'll also give you my thoughts on the seven deadly topics, seven things happening in the news that caught my eye. We've got a deep dive into civil rights and why, until now, America's never been greater. And the one red state vegetable that every American should boycott. Thank you for tuning in to the debut of the Radical Russ Show. And also, I want to ask the one question asked by another old white guy.
Who am I? Why am I here?
Exactly. Who am I and why am I here? Well, I want to just... My name is Radical Russ Belville. I'm 57 years old. I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river. Okay. It's actually an RV by the creek, but still, I guess I'm some sort of 21st century Matt Foley. And well, why am I here? Well, I've heard there's a huge market for pot-smoking, bald, cisgender, straight, white guys doing podcasts these days. At least I'm taller than Joe Rogan. My background, I was born in Idaho, and I was raised there, but I've moved to Oregon in the 21st century and love it. I began my life as a young Reagan Republican and evolved into a West Coast progressive. I guess I'm a red state refugee. And with what's happening in our country right now, I kind of remember that scene from Titanic when the boat is going down and the musicians are there on the deck and they realize, what are they going to do but play some music? Well, I'm a podcaster. I'm a radio guy. And so that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to speak out on the issues that matter to me. I began my career in 2006 winning a progressive talk radio contest, and my background was originally in radio and talk and politics. And this is really going to be a no-frills thing too as well. I've got the video up here because I have to do it, you know, streaming through YouTube and all of that. But really, I am a radio podcast guy, so don't expect anything fancy. And also, I am a staff of one. I'm doing all of this, all the IT tech, all the cameras and stuff. So blame me. It's all my fault. I just hope you enjoy it. And I hope maybe this helps you pass the time. And maybe we'll learn a few things along the way. Another thing that you're not going to get on this podcast from other podcasts is advertising and shilling. Oh, I hate to shill stuff. And worse, I hate everything involved in shilling stuff. Business frightens and confuses me. I'm just a simple caveman podcaster. So if you want to help me out, that's great. I've got a web store at radrust.com. I've got a donation button at radicalrust.com. I'm on Cash App. I'm on Venmo. We'll give you those contacts a little later in the show. If you want to help out, want to send me a few bucks, great. If you don't, great. This is free. It's always going to be free. So I just want to get the word out. Now, let me give you some background on me. I spent my 20s as a professional musician. This is a shot of me in a band called Wayward 3. I'm over there on the left. And yes, I actually did have hair at one point. And so playing in bars teaches you a lot about people. You learn a whole lot about people when their inhibitions are down. One of the reasons I'm a big fan of AOC is because she's a bartender. She worked in bars and she knows human nature and what gets through to people. But, you know, as time went on, I continued to work day jobs as well. And my day job was in information technology. And I managed to parlay that in my 30s to becoming an IT professional. I did database analysis and design. I did project management. I did web design. I did a lot of different things in information technology. This is a shot of me on the World Trade Center observation deck back in 1996 when I was working on Wall Street 1 year. So had a lot of experience in that world. So it's kind of interesting going from working in bars and seeing that side of people to working in the highest levels of Wall Street and Silicon Valley and hospitals and the military, just about every industry. I got a peek into what they were doing, at least on the IT side. Then, as I said, I won a radio contest, and part of that led to me becoming a marijuana legalizer. I worked for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and I went all across the country delivering speeches and presentations, and I did the daily podcast for Normal. This is a shot of me from the 2007 Seattle Hemp Fest, and yes, that is a quarter pound joint, or I think it might have been even more than a quarter pound. Anyway, kind of won that argument, though. When I first started in marijuana legalization, about one third of the country supported it. Now, over two thirds of the country support it. Over half the states have voted it to be legal. I still count South Dakota and Florida. South Dakota had it, and then it got taken away. Florida passed it by 57%, but they need 60% for their initiative. So that's who I am through my adult life, 20s, 30s, and 40s. And now as I hit my 50s, I'm kind of sort of retired, semi-retired, living out here in the mountains, keeping quiet. And it brings me to why I'm back on this podcast. And it's this guy. That's me, a little bit after my 17th birthday. I joined the Idaho National Guard on my 17th birthday, signed up because it was 1985. It was the mid-Reagan era. And I believed all the propaganda. I believed everything I had been taught about America being the shining city on the hill, being Camelot, being the leader of the free world, being the country that the rest of the world could look up to, that they could aspire to be. I got it hook, line, and sinker, and would feel the goosebumps during the pledge or during the national anthem. And I rose my right hand like everybody who joined the military or everybody who serves in elected office and swore to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that's the point we're at here now, is the time for citizens to stand up and fight for our Constitution. And I mean the Constitution not as a noun, not as a bunch of words written on paper, but Constitution as a verb. How are we constituted? Why do we have a government? Why are we a nation? And that's what I'm going to dig into on this podcast, is trying to bring us together, because as a red state refugee, I know how they think. I grew up in that world. I know their religious worldview. I know their cultural worldview. I know what it's like. And also from moving from a cultural red zone of Boise, Idaho, to one of the most progressive cities in the country, Portland, Oregon, where I spent most of my time, that opened my eyes to a whole new world. And while I believe the left is, you know, correct on almost everything and will want to pull this country back toward the left, I understand where the right is coming from on some things. And I hope I can get through to lefties how to better communicate to righties. And I'm not talking the MAGA, racist, deplorable ones, but the ones, you know, like, look, I got family still back in Idaho. Wonderful, family-oriented, good Christian folk. And I know that some of them have voted for the King Felon, the menace that's in the Oval Office right now, whose name I won't say. It's so hard to reconcile with knowing that your relative or your friend or your cousin that you grew up with is voting for that. And I want to dig into why, because I can't believe that they're voting for that. I have to believe they're voting against Democrats, against that. We'll see. That's going to be the journey of this show, is to figure out how we can be the United States. What can pull us all together? I spent my time in the Idaho National Guard in the 25th Army Band. I played bassoon, bass, and sousaphone. There's me as a specialist there playing my bass. I was quite a bit skinnier, wasn't I? And that's what I've got to do now, is I've got to just lend my talents to what we can do as the Titanic goes down. So that's what I'm going to do, is pull out the microphone and dig into the internet because I can't even watch the televised news anymore since the election. I can't even watch the late night monologues anymore. It's not even a funny situation to me what we're undergoing right now. Because what's going on right now, folks, and I want to warn anyone, if you're watching the video and the imagery from the Third Reich offends you, please turn away or skip ahead a minute or so. Because we're under attack by Nazis. Now, this is a Nazi naval flag that hangs in my hometown of Nampa, Idaho, in the only place it should hang, a museum. Right across the street from a house that I grew up in, well, one of the houses, one of the many houses, but when I was in fifth grade, I lived across the street from the Nampa Airport. It's one of them little municipal airports, got the, you know, crop dusters and stuff flying in it. And they have since built an amazing museum called the War Hawk Air Museum. And this Nazi flag was in there. And also, I'd have you notice the Iron Cross that's in the top left corner of this flag. This is the naval flag. So any, you know, there's a lot of Nazi symbolism out there that people try to say, oh, it's just a Christian cross, a cross, you know, like our Secretary of Defense. Don't believe it. It's Nazi. And we've got Nazis in our country right now. And so few people want to call them that. They fear, oh, you don't want to compare anything to Hitler. But if they're being like Nazis, you got to call them Nazis, don't you? They're doing Sieg Heils. They got a concentration camp at Gitmo. They're eradicating the legal recognition of transgender people. And do you realize one of the very first things the Nazis did was to go after gender nonconforming people, was to burn their books and eradicate them from public life. They've also identified and demonized an ethnic minority. For the Germans, it was the Jews, the Roma, and other peoples. For us, it's the immigrants. Oh, the immigrants. And they pardoned all the brown shirts from the insurrection. All the January 6ers are all pardoned and emboldened now to form militias and commit violence in his name. So this isn't just history repeating itself. This is one of those terrible, gritty Hollywood reboots that copies the original shot for shot. Let's not wait for the Kristallnacht and the Hugo Boss uniforms before we start calling a Nazi a Nazi. Now, also in the War Hawk Air Museum in Nampa, Idaho, is this display of this young man who went to fight in World War II against the Nazis. Now, he didn't actually fight directly against the Nazis. He fought in the Pacific Theater. He was a combat engineer, and his name was Sergeant Jack Morris. And that's my grandpa. That's my grandpa there. That's his uniform. That's some of his artifacts, I guess you'd call them, from his time fighting the Nazis, fighting fascism abroad, risking his life when he had young daughters at home, a young wife. Actually, I think he didn't have the daughters until after he got back from the war. They're all boomers now that I think of it. So, but he had a young wife waiting for him. And now, some 80, 90 years later, we've got people doing Sieg Heils. We got people flying Nazi flags in the streets. So, he didn't. I'm so glad that he passed away in the 20th century and he didn't live to see his and some of his buddies' sacrifices disrespected and dishonored by this cowardly draft-dodging traitor in the White House. And so for the oath that he swore and the oath that I swore, I'm just going to come back each week and fight for the America I love the only way I know how, by communicating truth and connecting people. I am a cosmopolitan man of varied and eclectic interests, but actually, really, it comes down to seven things that I'm interested in. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, politics, religion, sports, and science. We're going to put 60 seconds on the board for each of these in a rapid-fire segment I like to call the Seven Deadly Topics. So sex. The National Park Service scrubbed the T from the Stonewall front page. It says, quote, before the 1960s, almost everything about living openly as a lesbian, gay, bisexual person was illegal. The Stonewall Uprising on June 28, 1969 is a milestone in the quest for LGB civil rights and provided momentum for a movement, end quote. But they missed it on the Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera article that says, quote, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera were self-proclaimed drag performers and vibrant, indelible figures in Greenwich Village street life. The women were prominent figures in the Stonewall uprisings. Johnson and Rivera opened the first LGBTQ plus youth shelter in North America, and these trailblazers became the first trans women of color to lead an organization in the United States, end quote. Stonewall has a T in it. You're not going to erase the transgender people. They have been around since antiquity. They will continue to be around. This is just another Nazi tactic. Drugs. Well, my home state of Idaho is added again. It's the only Western state without even medical marijuana, and it still treats possession of joints like a jailable offense. Well, now they're back. The legislature wants to pass a law making possession a mandatory $300 fine. There is no other misdemeanor in the state that has a mandatory minimum fine. Idaho is so afraid of medical marijuana being legalized that they've, every legislative session since 2010, put forth bills to hamstring the citizen initiative process. And if you look at this chart that I've got on the right, this is a chart of the marijuana that's sold out of the easternmost county in Oregon, in which there's a city called Ontario that has 11,000 people and 12 marijuana dispensaries. And for the past, about 3 years, every month they sell $8 to $9 million of marijuana to the 850,000 Idahoans just across the border, making it the third most popular or the best-selling county in the state. Okay, rock and roll. Let's get to the rock and roll. I'm down with the kids and their Roman numerals, Avic the Second, Charlie 1010, and Doek the Second. But I listened to it's Doechi. Oh, dang, I got to stop doing this in all capitals. But I heard this song she has. It's about get your dicks up, get your sticks up, get your dicks up. Like, I just can't imagine what the kids are going to have to do in the future. I mean, we went from wake up little Susie to squeeze the lemon till the juice runs down my leg to my anaconda don't want none. Gonna have you naked by the end of this song. Got a wet ass pussy. I mean, where are they going to go from here? What are the kids in 20 years going to be saying? Be like, I'm going to wreck you, hun, with a medical speculum. Yeah, your Sigmoid Colin's going to be expecting some. I love the music, by the way. Was just turned on to Doechi recently, and it's fantastic. But come on, kids, what are you going to do? All right, let's get to politics. In politics, we got all these nominations happening from King Felon that are getting votes from Democrats. What the hell? Okay, some of them didn't. Pete Hegseth, the abusive drunk Christian nationalist Fox host running defense. RFK Jr., the roadkill eating, whalehead stealing, brainworm having, anti-vax conspiracy theorist, steroid freak running Health and Human Services. Tulsi Gabbard, the Russian spy for Director of National Intelligence. Russell Vought, the Project 2025 guy for the Office of Management and Budget. But they didn't get any Democratic votes, but some of these people are. Christy Noem, the puppy killer, got Democratic votes. Sean Duffy, the real world MTV guy for transportation, got votes. Marco Rubio got all the votes for Secretary of State. Look, Democrats, if someone's willing to take a nomination to work for King Felon, that automatically disqualifies them. There should be no Democratic votes for any of these nominations at all. All right, let's get to religion. Oh my God, this preacher, this Anglican Catholic Church guy, this Father Calvin Robinson, he's one of the guys who recently did the Nazi salute in one of his online things. I just saw a video recently of another three, I can't remember if they're Catholic or not, there's three in some web video that were doing the Nazi. You don't joke about the Nazi salute. It's not something to troll people with. It's just amazing to me how far we've come in this country where they think this is funny. They think this is trolling. It's like, oh, you think everything's Nazi, or they do the little okay symbol. Oh, you think that's white power? Look, folks, this is the United States of America, and we need to remain a secular democracy. We've got to have no tolerance for intolerance. It's not a paradox. You do not tolerate this Nazi stuff. Let's move on to sports. Oh, congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles, who demolished the Kansas City Chiefs, holding them to 1 yard and one first down in the first half and 0 points until 34 seconds of the third quarter. But boo on Fox for muting the boos for King Felon and muting the rap of Kendrick Lamar, which was incredible. Also, boo to the NFL for removing end racism from the end zone. It really distracted me from the team named after Native American leaders who play in Arrowhead Stadium and whose fans do a tomahawk chop to a fake Hollywood Indian chant, completely choking in the Super Bowl. It was really, really distracting. You got to put that end racism back in there, or we'll never end racism if we don't have it on the end zone, for Christ's sake. Which reminds me, who is Colin Kaepernick playing for next year anyway? Boy, can't wait for the next Super Bowl halftime show with, I don't know, who's it going to be, Kid Rock and Lee Greenwood? Oh my God, these next 4 years are going to be something. All right, on to our final topic, science. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Earth's average land and ocean surface temperature in 2024 was 2.32 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average, the highest global temperature among all the years since 1850. They've been tracking this since 1850, and we've never been hotter. The planet's 10 warmest years since 1850 have all occurred in the past decade. So, what's the administration's solution to this one? Get rid of NOAA. Yeah, if we don't talk about it, we don't have to worry about it. If there's no data to count, then nobody will notice. This map is showing every place on the planet except for a couple little tips of the south of South America and the very north of, I guess, Antarctica there. Every place else is red. Every place else is record warmest or much warmer than average. This climate catastrophe is going to kill us all, folks. Now, before we get on to our interview coming up, we've got Gabby Johnson from Grant's Past Remembrance Project. I want to give you the contact information. You can contact the Radical Russ Show. My email is radicalruss@gmail.com. You can find me on Blue Sky at radicalruss.com. And my website is radicalruss.com. What a coincidence. Online store, radrust.com. And soon we will have a live call-in and message number. I'm also at Radical Russ on everything else, like literally everything else. But if it's owned by a billionaire, I'm not going to be checking it. So just get a hold of me on Blue Sky if you like. All right, everybody. Joining me today, we have Gabby Johnson from the Grants Pass Remembrance Project. Gabby, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Russ. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I found you this last Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It was actually January 18th. You guys put on a fantastic event at the Grants Pass High School. And in addition to there being a lot of information on Black History Month, there were Mexican culture dancers and other events. So is that what the Grants Pass Remembrance Project is all about? Is just that recognition of different races and different cultures here in the state of Oregon?
You know what? The Grants Pass Remembrance Project is actually very specific to our history as a sundown town, and that was very targeted to Black Americans. And so we specifically kind of zoom in on how can we grow an increasing welcome in our community for our Black neighbors. And so that includes hosting events that are often a part of Black history in some way. So we also host the Juneteenth celebration that happens in Grants Pass annually. We'll be doing our third annual this coming June, and the MLK gathering. Now, MLK gathering, the reason it has taken on that, like this everybody, is really in honor of Dr. King's legacy of the beloved community, which is everybody. We're all there. And so it's just a sweet time to kind of taste that beloved community.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of the state of Oregon and what you mean by a sundown town. And my audience knows that I'm originally from the state of Idaho. So my experience of these things is extremely limited, as the state of Idaho, a state with 2 million people, has less than 13,000 black citizens living there. It's just so my experience with this is I'm looking to learn. I'm looking to meet more people and learn more about these cultures. And just for our listeners out there who don't have video, you too are a person with the complexion of protection like myself. We're a very pale-skinned person. Johnson with an
I'm a white woman.
With an EN, that's as Scandinavian as you get. So let's talk about this background here, because you know, when I moved from Idaho to originally Portland, Oregon, to me, it was like a cornucopia of diversity. But I later learned that Portland is the whitest large American city as far as the demographics go. So why is that? Why is Oregon such a white place?
You know, I actually didn't find out about that history myself until I moved. I moved to Portland first and then moved into Grants Pass and was very struck by the whiteness of Grants Pass. My brother is black, and so he was going to be coming to visit. And when I heard about the rumor of the sundown town, was like, whoa, wait a minute here. And so in my researching about Grants Pass, I actually found out that it was the whole state of Oregon that had laws that essentially protected it as a whites only state. And that's the only state in the union to have done that.
So we're talking from the move from being the Oregon Territory back in the day, sorry to interrupt, but being the Oregon Territory and then becoming a state, they specifically said only white people can come?
Yes. That was one of those, you know, this was a season where things were starting to change, and it was kind of that, we just don't want to deal with it. And so we're just going to make it whites only.
Yeah. And wasn't Oregon statehood sometime in the middle of the Civil War or after the Civil War? I forget my exact history there.
You know, I'm pretty sure it was after.
Yeah. It's like 69, I think 1869 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I am not a history buff. I've become more of a history buff in this process of realizing how much our history affects our present and how much knowing our history really does make a difference to being able to move forward well. So I've become a history buff in this process, but yeah. Yeah.
So how have things, the state of Oregon begins as being kind of a designated white homeland. Of course, that's got to have changed over time. And we also have this phenomenon, you mentioned it in our introduction, of Grants Pass specifically being one of many of what they called sundown towns. And maybe listeners from the South know what I'm talking about, but folks out West, maybe they don't know what that means. What is a sundown town?
Yeah, for sure. So a sundown town is a place that there's a lot of confusion on whether it was a law that was on the books, but it was most often a culturally enforced kind of socially accepted rule that people that were black needed to be out of town by sundown. Mm. And that was a way of saying, we don't want you to live here. That was kind of the protection of don't make your home here. You're not welcome here long term. And so, you know, in our community, we even up into the 60s, we'd have black entertainers come, and up into the 70s and people that would come to be here, but could not then spend the night here at hotels. Mm. They would need to find other accommodations. And now sundown towns are something that's common, actually a fairly common history anywhere outside of the South. Now the South is kind of the only place where you couldn't say, we don't want you here, because that was where they were.
Right.
And so it's, you know, I've heard of Pasadena and other places in Southern California that were sundown towns. Of course, there's a number of places in Oregon once it stopped being a sundown state, you know, kind of communities kind of took that on as their own. But it's, you know, throughout our whole country, sundown towns were a way of saying not here. Mm. We don't want you to make your home here.
And this isn't exactly ancient history, is it? This is something that is within living memory of people.
Yes.
And
It's I know, so I have a friend who actually just came to pick up my son just a bit ago, and he, to hang out with him, and he remembers when the sign came down in our community and knows, like there were other, so we had a
an
sign.
actual sign.
We had an actual
Wow.
sign that was in our community. And then the oral history tells us, and that, so that what came down sometime in the 70s is what we've heard.
Wow.
And then when that came down, for a while, there were like paper signs that people were putting up. And then that has since stopped. In my lifetime here, I've lived here for 12 years. We've found flyers promoting the KKK or groups very similar to that promote that. On the surface, they look like, family first and, moral right things. But as you get into the depths, you realize, oh, you're saying white people
Right.
only. That's a part of, it's embedded in that, that philosophy. So it is very recent, but it's also a shameful one. So people don't talk about it very much. And so that's been a real, one of the first things that we really wrestled with at Grants Past Remembrance was we really want to do this in a spirit of hope and moving forward, that people, that we can change, that people can change, that we can have this conversation without that shame and guilt element. Because honestly, in any of our personal lives, we know this, in any relationship, that shame and guilt just bogs us down. It doesn't actually move us forward. And so how can we move forward with this remembering and moving forward into our future well?
And specifically, the Remembrance Project is about collecting those oral histories from the residents. And I understand both black and white residents that you've been speaking with. And
Yes.
how have there been differences or contrasts in how white residents and black residents remember this era?
Yeah. So when I say Sundown Town, and like for, I would say 95% of the white folks that I talk with, they don't know what I'm referring to, and so I always have to define it. But by the time I define it, there's again 90, maybe 92%. There's a few people that like are totally surprised, but very few are totally surprised. Most people are like, oh, I know what you're talking about. Like, oh, I'm familiar. I've heard some rumor, or I like, this sounds really familiar. When we talk with our Black neighbors and Black folks, whether they're local or not local, they know the term Sundown Town. They know the reputation of Grants Pass. And that's actually one of the things that really motivates us in our work, is knowing that the Black community still has, like, we still have a reputation among the Black community, and we want to change that reputation. We really do believe that the majority of our neighbors don't want to be a sundown town anymore. That's not what they want. Now, there, we have all varying degrees of what it means to move forward or how we can do that well. But there is kind of this consensus of, that's not good. Like, that's not what we want to be.
Right.
And so that element of, how do we change our reputation? Like, how do we grow in welcome? And there is, I do believe there's a majority interest in changing that and growing in welcome, though it's a hard conversation about what welcome looks like and how do we do that well. And a lot of that involves listening to our neighbors and what does it look like to our Black neighbors for us to do welcome well? Where are they not experiencing welcome still, and what can we grow in? And that listening element is one that we seek to support our white neighbors in being able to listen well, because it is hard to listen to hard things and to realize that, like, oh gosh, we still aren't, like, we're still growing in this. I thought we were done. I really wanted to be done.
We elected a black president. What do you want?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you bring this up because there's a topic that I'm just learning about as well as I research this, and that's the concept of white fragility. This ability for white folks to be able to listen to this history and reconcile this history. But there seems to be a push now, especially at the federal level, with the MAGA movement, to just put all that in the closet, to just forget that that actually exists, or to even actively prevent the teaching of it for fear that it embarrasses or it shames white people. What would you have to say to counter that as far as the idea of white fragility and wanting to hide all this stuff away?
Yeah, I think it's really there's so many parallels in personal life too. So in our personal lives, when someone brings up to us something that you did that really harmed them, that you weren't aware of, it's a very, very natural thing to be defensive at first and to want to not be true. Like it's just a very natural thing to want that can't be true. Please tell me that's not true. You know, like it's So there's a lot of really natural reactions that come up. And I think there it is also true that on the other side of hearing that after you've like been dealing with it for so long, that's a really hard thing to hear someone do. And so there can be a it's it there's just a lot of natural this back and forth of why aren't you able to listen? And I just don't want this to be true. And that wrestle that we're doing, we don't do it cleanly. Like we have a lot of people have been hurt in the process. And so I do actually have a lot of empathy for the reaction that we're seeing from like the big group, conservative Republican group. I have a lot of empathy for that, and I can see where that's coming from. And at the same time, I would most definitely want to say, can we please slow down? Can we please slow down? Because there are pieces of our history that if we just like it is possible to listen to our history and to say, you know what, we were wrong and we are broken. And we have some beautiful things going on in our country. We have some beautiful things in our history, and both of those things can be true at the same time. And a lot of times it can feel like if you tell me we are broken, I must all those other things that I know are good must not be true too. And so it's a tricky thing to hold those two things at the same time to say, you know, we have this phrase in our work where we talk about being broken and beautiful. Grants Pass itself, like we have a beautiful history that is right alongside our deeply, deeply broken history. And both of those things can exist at the same time. And today we have neighbors that have been in our community for a while, Black neighbors that feel accepted and are glad for it. And we have many neighbors, and granted, I would say from our oral history collections and from our connections, it is a larger group of people that are still seeking to feel like this is home and like they're welcome. And even the people that do feel welcomed, some of them would say it took a long time to feel that welcome. And so it's this piece of like, but both of those things can also exist at the same time. And so I really would say, like, can we slow down? Can we slow down? Because there are some decisions that we're making that will continue to harm us for years to come. And now, granted, I believe in hope, and I believe that people can change and that we can change. And I don't think that that is gone just because there are decisions that are being made that seem to be saying this, we don't want this to be true, or we need to push this aside in order to grow. And I would say, no, actually, I think we need to carry it along with us in order to actually grow, because what we'll do if we're pushing this history aside, we're pushing whole groups of people aside at the same time. And that will wound us because these are groups of people that have such deep strength and wisdom that make our country great. That's like we have such a beautiful diversity in our country, and that's one of the reasons it's I think like I love it so much, and it's one of our strengths that we can offer, as well as it will be our deepest weakness, and our deepest conflict will find itself there too, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you're doing this work, Gabby Johnson, because like you said, this is not ancient history. Even just last year, on my car, I have a Black Lives Matter sticker. And last year in a parking lot, someone had left a note on my car calling me a BLM racist and that all lives matter. And I'm like, somebody was so triggered by that that they had to take the time. I'm glad they didn't key my car or something, but they had to leave me a note to tell me. So I know this work needs to be done. There's still people out there that need this help. So if they're interested in learning more about Grants Pass Remembrance specifically, how can they get in touch with you? Are there web resources or videos they should follow up with, or books or anything you can recommend?
Yes, there's a couple different things. Now we have a Linktree site. So if you type in Grants Pass Remembrance Linktree, you'll hop to our site. We've got our oral history collection there. We've got info on events that we do. We've got a number of resources. We do podcasts as well because so much of it is the spirit of the work that we do. You know, the person that left you that note, I'd love them to understand that when we say Black Lives Matter, we're not saying that other lives don't matter, but it is true at the same time that there are some people that have communicated that white lives matter less in order for Black lives to matter. And we can have both lives matter at the same time. And so we actually don't use that. We don't talk about Black Lives Matter. We don't use that phrase in our work because we know it's triggering and because we know that it doesn't communicate what we want it to communicate to so many of our neighbors. And so it's one of those things where there's just so much to learn. Now, there are some books that have been really helpful along the process for many of us. Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson is a wonderful book. It gives some of that picture and window into some of the current day experiences of our neighbors that are particularly in the justice system that are Black and being falsely accused of things. And the work there that's happening, The Place We Make by Sarah Sanderson is another book that actually delves into Oregon history really deeply. And so
Good.
that's a wonderful book to read to you get both a story and the history of our place. And that was written just recently. And so that's kind of a current, it's this blending of how our history affects where we're going. And there's a number of books like that. We're hoping to put out actually kind of a book recommendation list in the next bit of time because it is true. How do we grow in these things? And not all books are accessible to all of our neighbors. You know, we do community work. So that means all of our neighbors. That means liberal, conservative, Black, white. That means we're a very diverse place when you think about it like that. Poor, wealthy, like all of the things that you put people in. No, how do we all grow in this? And that's going to look different. There will be people that will resonate with some books and others that don't. And so we do seek to find those books that can reach the widest number of people. Now we know not everybody will want to join this work with us, but gosh, a whole lot of us can. A whole lot of us are ready.
It's kind of a shame how the term Black Lives Matter has become so triggering. I always like to say there's no only or more in that phrase.
Yes.
There's no only or more. And
Yes.
it seems
Yeah.
seemingly we get the same sort of retrofitting of terms like critical race theory or DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion.
Yes.
There's so much more we could
Yes.
talk about, and I'd love to bring you back on another episode, but that's all the time we've got for now. Gabby Johnson from Grants Pass Remembrance, thank you so much for joining me here on the debut of the Radical Russ Show.
Thank you so much, Russ.
'Welcome back, everybody. Time for the Radical Rant. And I've been thinking a little lately on this Make America Great Again slogan. Make America Great Again. Like make, to compel, to force, to create, and great, to be estimable, powerful, again. So wait, we must have been great sometime before. If we're going to make America great again, there must have been some time before when America was great. And they never seem to tell you what that is. What year exactly? What decade exactly was America great before? Because I look around, well, at least until lately, America's been pretty great. Maybe my perspective's a little skewed by, you know, this, but how great were we in the past? Anyway, let's take a look back. Were we great in 2000? Do we need to go back to 2000 to be great again? Well, what has happened since 2000? Well, we had the 2003 decision, Lawrence v. Texas, which legalized gay sex. Before this decision, if you were gay and caught having sex, you could be arrested for that. Arrested. That was overturned in 2003. And then in 2009, we had the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Act. That was a kind of an anti-hate crime thing. Before that act, you know, hate crimes were much less punished. We had in 2009, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. That was a women's pay issue, trying to get equal pay for women doing equal work. We had the 2011 declaration that gay people could openly serve in the military. Imagine that you want to fight a war and you're going to turn away 10% of the people that would want to fight. Crazy, but it was true. And in 2013, it was decided that women could serve in combat roles. Before that, we were excluding over half of the population from being like, you know, fighter pilots and such. You know, if Tammy Duckworth in her helicopter and some of these other women who've served honorably don't prove that was ridiculous. So, oh, and of course, 2015, Obergefell v. Hodges, that's the gay marriage decision. Before that, you were limited to only marrying someone of the opposite sex, which I always thought was just kind of sexist, right? Whether you were gay or not, right? Why are you restricting who I can choose to marry? So were we great in 2000? Is that where we have to go back to? Because it doesn't sound so great if you're gay or black or female. Well, maybe it was earlier. Let's go back to 1980. Were we great in 1980? Is that how far we got to go back here, MAGA? Great in 1980, you know, before the Americans with Disability Act was passed in 1990, before the Family and Medical Leave Act was passed in 93, before the Violence Against Women Act was passed in 94, before Romer v. Evans. This is an interesting case. Romer v. Evans was a case that decided that the states couldn't make anti-gay laws that conflicted with the federal level of, you know, not discriminating against people. So before that, states could set up their own laws to deny gay people. So were we great in 1980? Well, yeah, maybe if you're not gay or disabled or a new parent that needs family and medical leave or a woman who's being abused, I guess we weren't great then. Let's go farther. Maybe 1970. Maybe we were great in 1970, you know, before the passage of Title IX that mandated equality in women's sports. Before that, colleges, you know, could just give women the short shrift and not really pay much attention to their funding or scholarships or anything like that, and just give it all to the men. Of course, 1973, the Roe v. Wade decision that, oh, yeah, Roe v. Wade, we kind of lost that one already, didn't we? Anyway, 1973, there was also the declaration by the American Psychiatric Association that homosexuality is not a mental illness. Yeah, before that, you could actually be committed against your will for having the mental illness of being gay. Yeah. 1974, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. This is where it set it up so that women could get bank accounts, checking accounts, you know, credit accounts, without their husband's permission or without a man involved. Yeah, yeah. Before 1974, in my lifetime, was a time when women could not be economically independent of a man. 1978, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, that forbade discriminating against women in the workplace by the fact that they were pregnant. Before that, you could just fire them. Oh, you got pregnant? Get out. So were we great in 1970? Sure, maybe if you're not gay or female or pregnant. Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's go back a little farther. 1960. 1960, before I was born. Were we great before I was born? Let's see, 1963, the Equal Pay Act, that was a women's pay issue. 1964, oh yeah, Civil Rights Act. The Civil Rights Act had passed to allow that public accommodations could not be segregated. 1965, the Voting Rights Act, racial vote suppression was happening.
The Supreme Court decided that you could racially support.
Okay. 1967, Loving v. Virginia. That was the decision that allowed for interracial marriage. Before that, there were states where you couldn't marry someone of a different race. Yeah. 1968, the Age Discrimination Act. Before that, in hiring and firing, you could just fire someone because you just got too old. Sorry, get out. 1968, the EEOC gender ad rule. This had to do with advertising for jobs where you could just flat out say in the job ad, no women need apply. That had to be taken care of by that act. So, oh yeah, the administration just recently did away with some of that too. I guess you can discriminate against. Anyway, the federal hate crimes law, that came out in 1969. Before that, it wasn't, you know, punished at a federal level more intensely just because you were beating someone because they were gay or black or... So were we great in the 1960s? Yeah, maybe if you're not black or female or old. I'm sensing a pattern here that kind of looks like a pattern. Oh, maybe we need to just go way back. Let's go way back to 1930. 1930, we had the passage of the 1935 National Labor Relations Act. That was the act that protected the formation of unions at the workplace. And before that, you know, they would just send in the Pinkertons to beat the hell out of you and kill you, right? The National Labor Relations. So unions, I think that's generally a good thing. The Social Security Act was 1935. Were we great before we had Social Security? Like, how far back do we have to go? The Fair Labor Standards Act that made the minimum wage, got to get rid of that? Do we need to get rid of the 1954 Brown v. Board of Education, where schools were integrated? This was one that I thought was interesting. The 1958 case of One Inc. versus Olson, which made gay media legal. Now, I know what you're thinking. It's like, well, yeah, gay porn. No, not gay porn. Not pornography. Nothing obscene. Like, if you wrote a book about gay people, and there are gay people, and they exist, right? That could be deemed indecent media before this decision. It took a 1958 court decision to say, yes, you can write about gay people. You can write about gayness without discussing the sexual aspect. Just the act of being gay, that could be banned in the mail. They could shut that down before that decision. Amazing. So I guess we were great in 1930 if you're not gay, black, old, or a working class person. Let's really roll it back. Let's go back to 1830. Were we great in 1830? Is that how far back we have to go, you know, before the Married Women's Property Act? This was an act that basically allowed for women to possess things. It was like before that, they couldn't even really possess things. The 1862 Homestead Act that allowed women to be ahead of household, you know, go out on the homestead. And, you know, before that, you had to be married there was all sorts of issues. 1863 Emancipation Proclamation, freeing the slaves. I guess maybe some people think that wasn't so great, maybe. The 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, although I guess not all of the 14th Amendment applies anymore. The 1920 19th Amendment that gave women the right to vote. Is this how far back they're taking us? 1924, the Declaration of Indigenous Citizenship. This is something I did not know. That while black folks, the emancipated slaves, got their citizenship via the amendments in the 1865, you know, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, indigenous people, Native Americans, weren't officially citizens until 1924. So were we great in 1830? Yeah, if you're not female, black, or Native American. So what Make America Great Again pretty much says to me is that Make America White Again. Make America the white Christian patriarchal homeland. Take away all the progress that's been made for black people, women, trans people, native people, immigrants, old people, working class people, everybody but the rich white man. That's what Make America Great Again says. And that's why that phrase is an intentionally hostile phrase. It's intentionally hostile. Someone wearing that hat, when I see it, is someone that is telling me, number one, they don't think America is great now. They hate America and everything about it that makes it great. The diversity that makes it great. It's an intentionally hostile act wearing that hat. And when I see it out in public, it just tells me immediately that there is someone who does not care. There is someone lacking in empathy. There is someone who would willingly snitch out Anne Frank in the attic. We should act accordingly. But I don't think necessarily there's some things in the past we couldn't go back to. I do have some ideas on how we could go back to some things to make America great again. Let's go back before the 2022 Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health anti-abortion decision. The decision that took a 50-year right away from women. And I know it still boggles my mind that we didn't fill the streets with protest and tear down the walls when these kind of things happen. Let's go before 2013, the Shelby Counter v. Holder decision, the one that took away the Voting Rights Act. Can we go back before that when we could still police the southern states to make sure they weren't doing some racial gerrymandering shenanigans with voting rights? We could go back to before the 2010 Citizens United decision, the one that allowed money to be declared speech, so whoever's got the most money has the most speech. We could go back to 1982 before they made stock buybacks legal. Back in the day, stock buybacks were illegal. They were rightly seen as stock manipulation, as just a way of accumulating wealth that doesn't do anything for helping the company, investing in the company, or helping the workers. Let's make stock buybacks illegal again. And how about, let's go back to 1952's 92% top marginal tax rate. Now, people see that, sometimes they freak out because they think, oh, taxing everybody at 92%. No. These top marginal rates mean after you get above rich as hell, after you get above rich as hell, everything above that, we're taking 92% of it. Let's get back to that when we were actually building roads and universities and libraries and helping the people. We could go back to the 1930s. We could go back to 1933 when we had the public works projects, the CCC, the TVA, the WPA, the government putting people to work to fix things. We could do that. That might help make America great again. Let's go way back to before 1886, when corporations were declared legal persons, these ethereal, non-corporal, infinite corporate beings that don't need clean air, don't need clean water, that live forever, that can own and absorb other corporate beings. How can they be people? How can we people, meet people, compete with that? Let's go back and take that away. There are some things we could do to make America great again for all Americans. And that's about all the time we have today for the Radical Rush Show. It's been a while since I've done this, and my timings aren't as good as they are. This is written, produced, directed, engineered, designed, researched, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belda, except this main theme, which is from We Love the Herb, by Herbal Nation. It was the song I'd used for my whole marijuana podcasting career, and it just makes me feel at home. We will talk about marijuana on some future shows as well, and had to skip the Idaho boycott section, but we will definitely get to the Idaho boycott section. Send your comments, kudos, and complaints by email to RadicalRuss@gmail.com, at my Radical Russ YouTube channel, or at RadicalRuss.com on Blue Sky and nowhere else. You can send your monetary appreciation via Venmo at Radical Russ, Cash App, $RadRuss, and PayPal via my website at RadicalRuss.com. Subscribe to The Radical Russ Show wherever you get your podcasts, even the ones that have short, pot-smoking, bald, white, cisgender, male podcasters on them. who make a lot more money than me. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other, citizens. Like I said, it's been a while.